Good morning, dear friends. Great to see you all. Well, let's go ahead and introduce ourselves. My name is David Eby, and it is a great joy to be down here in Palo Alto. So what I'll have you do is say your name and what field of work that you do in which you seek inspiration. It can be occupational, or it can be a hobby, or it can just be a passion or an interest. For me, it's musical performance and teaching. And I'll tell you my story in a little while, but first I want to hear from you about what brought you here this morning. So I had the great honor of traveling from Portland to San Jose with Asha. And so we got to spend about 5 hours together chatting about many different things. And one of the things she said to me is, and she set it up in such a way that it was just perfect, and it might sound a little odd right now, but it was, don't be speaking to fall in love with your own ideas, but to intuitively listen for what the audience needs at this moment. So I'm kind of new at that, because we talked about like how when I stand up in front of the choir, I don't plan or anything. I'm just like, okay, God, what is going to come through now? And the question of that you asked last night of, will I ever stop asking these questions of what do you want to have come through, is great when I'm performing, but when I'm speaking, I'm not so used to that. So throughout the day, I'll be asking for feedback and questions and how we can apply this so to other areas of your life. So there is going to be a good deal of musical information here, but what I would invite you to do is to help me understand even more the ripples that this can have into other areas of life. I've been spending my time right now in presenting meditation for musicians, and it's a really wonderful opportunity to, once again, as Steve was saying, show the young musicians of today that there is a chance to come from a different place than just getting all the technical things right. Tonight, I hope you are able to come tonight, because I'll be presenting a lot of these ideas and application through my own performance, and it's really, really fun program. So I'd like to start with sharing with you a video that I just did. Once again, it's about music, but it's going to introduce topics that we'll talk about throughout the day. Have you ever gone so deep into a magical live performance that you resonated with something beyond the notes, or felt a powerful connection with the other performers and audience? Here's how the magic works. The composer writes down a musical idea, the musician reads it, and produces sound waves that are heard by the audience. And sometimes composers become inspired. Great composers have the intuitive understanding and technical skill to encode the inspiration into their music. Their music becomes both a container and roadmap for us to tap into the universal source of their inspiration. Great performers know how to read between the notes to access and convey this inspiration through even the simplest of notes. Just as water waves can carry flotsam and jetsam to the shore, sound waves carry vibrations of energy, thought, feeling, and emotion to the ears and souls of the audience. Think of a time when you were touched or moved by an amazing performance. Chances are your mind was still and your heart was open. When you are tuned in just like this, sympathetic resonance awakens your own genuine response to the presence of inspiration. Being an inspired performer isn't always so easy, though. Sometimes your resonance is dampened by fear, insecurities, and self-doubt, worries and distractions, control issues and expectations, desires and judgment, the future and the past. However, by practicing meditation, you can open tiny gaps in your constant barrage of thoughts. Little by little, these gaps widen. As you continue to meditate, you create space for the inspiration encoded within the music's container to blossom within you and into a magical performance. So this is what we'll be kind of talking about today, is how to bring about inspiration in any aspect of our lives. And inspiration, just to talk about what this is, I'll be referring to it throughout the day with that beautiful floral image that you'll be seeing there. And I also wanted to reference it through this quote. Go ahead and just read that phrase. Can everybody see that well enough? A word is like a drunken, dumb man who feels what kind of liquor is in him, but who is unable to express himself clearly about it. Music. Music is that same idea. You can't really talk about music very well, but you can. Musicians are often filled with that joy that comes out through their music. He may, by merely a cry or a little gesture, indicate the kind of wine he drank. So are the words in these demands drunk with God, but they would never be able fully to express and explain the quality of wine of inspiration within them, except by way of a little gesture and a mumbled cry of suggestion. This is from Yogananda's Whispers from Eternity. And he's speaking about his, and I have yet to read any other author that is able to infuse such inspiration into every single word. I mean, it's amazing the power and the vitality and the juice of inspiration that is the presence of God that's within each one of the Whispers from Eternity. It's just amazing to me how each of them have a slightly subtle, different take on the divine and how and his contact with the divine and his yearning and his ability to say, here, these are for you. Take them, find out which one you need, use that to then have a contact of the divine. Once again, the flame of inspiration is hidden within the lines of the prayers and demands in this book. The inspiration behind the prayers and demands can only be felt according to the depths of one's intuition and feeling. But if you will try repeatedly to feel the deep inspiration behind and within it, you will thus spiritualize it. That is, rouse the inspiration slumbering beneath the thick silken quilt of words. Resurrect words from the sepulcher of hollow intellectual concepts by the Christ command of your deepest perception. So, we're going to be talking about these three things: inspiration, feeling, and perception, and a lot of other things as well. Before I continue, I'll ask that you guys take one and pass it down. First thing you're going to say when you get this is, I can't read that. I'm terribly sorry. and we'll talk about this. This is for an upcoming full-day workshop in June. I'll just have you take one and pass it down. Basically, the flow for the morning is we're going to go now until 11:30, take a 11:40, take a 20-minute break. Oops. It's not 2 o'clock, but 12 o'clock is going to be the application through music, and then closing by 1. When I talk about feeling, and when Yogananda talks about feeling, it's not the feeling of, oh, I feel sad, or I feel happy, or I feel, you know, a little okay. We're not talking about that type of feeling. We're talking about the feeling of perception, where you can perceive something that you cannot manufacture yourself. You know that we can make ourselves sad. We can make ourselves happy. We can make ourselves grumpy or angry or giddy, all these different emotions and feelings, we can kind of get there ourselves. But the inspiration that I'm talking about today is a feeling or an energy or a vibration that you cannot yourself manufacture. Something that it's like, whoa, there's something here and I'm not the one who's creating that. How many of you have had that kind of experience before? So by deepening your receptivity through meditation, through attunement, these presence of inspiration can come more and more easily. So on your sheet, you'll see a couple of words that we're also going to introduce today. And the first of which is resonance. And resonance is a field of energy in a state of vibration. So a resonance can be physical. It can be a resounding string on my cello. It can be the resonance of this hall. It can be the resonance of my voice. The Tacoma Narrows Bridge in 1940 collapsed through resonance. We'll talk about that in a little bit. But resonant, I'm going to introduce a term to you and see how it floats, because it's something I've, as you can see, I've been thinking about these. I haven't told you my story. I've always been told that people listen better if they know you a little bit more. They can trust you a little bit more if they've heard your story. So I can tell you my story. Okay. When I was a child, my father was a Presbyterian minister, and he would have his youth group over at our church, over at our house rather, singing in the living room, and they would be singing songs, this is in the 70s, of Godspell, like Pass It On, and other just really folky, Christian, uplifting tunes. And I was about 6 or 7 years old, and I just remember that feeling of, ah, as long as I've got music, as long as I've got this vibration of music, everything is going to be okay. Because I felt that love that was present there. And it wasn't soon thereafter that I picked up the cello and I made my way through high school, and music was like, yes, I love music. It just does all these things to me. I couldn't define it, but it was always there. And I had this decision to make. Should I go into music or should I go into engineering? Music engineering. And it was my first kind of going within and seeing where I needed to go. And there are days when I said, why wasn't I just an engineer? And I could many of my present challenges might be a little bit more easily. But nonetheless, I went into music. I followed my heart because my heart was saying, there is something here. There, and if you don't follow it, you're always going to regret. You're always going to have that thought in the back of your mind. And at that point, it was God was speaking through my ego. How good could I have been? I would have gone to a symphony concert and be like, ah, I wonder if I could be one of those people who seem to be having such a beautiful time playing up there. I wonder if I could have been that. But no, I became an engineer. Well, that didn't happen. I went into music and had a wonderful experiences learning about the craft of music making. But yet there was something deep within me that was yearning for something, that was yearning for a higher expression, that was yearning to merge my music and connect my music to a greater reality and a greater service. I'll never forget the day that I, in my senior year, went to play in a nearby city orchestra. And they often brought members of my college in to be ringers or substitute musicians to kind of fill the ranks there. And what I found there was so shocking. Here I was playing under an uninspired conductor, playing by music that I really didn't appreciate playing or wasn't feeding me anything. And I was surrounded by miserable, cynical musicians. And that was the worst of it. I felt like I was drowning in their misery. And I went home and I went back to school, and I went the next day to my teacher and said, you know, what am I supposed to do with this? And he said, David, you have to look into your heart and follow where it leads. Well, I was just a 20-year-old kid coked up on his ego, and so I didn't know how to look into my heart. That was something very foreign to me. So I went, okay. I went home and I went, oh, okay. I'll keep going. And so I went on and I pursued it again. I hadn't learned my lesson. I went and got my master's in cello performance. And once again, found myself like, oh, what am I doing? This is ridiculous. I'm never going to find fulfillment in these these orchestral ways, because, you know, typically it's so sad that a lot of musicians, Steve thankfully is not one of them, who were looking for happiness in all the wrong places and looking for happiness in getting everything all taken care of and security and these kind of things through outward means rather than from that inner connection with God. So I started searching in other ways. I became a musical storyteller in this magical troupe, and their mission was to ignite imaginations. And so I did that for a couple of years, and then I was talking to the director, and I said, you know, when can we do a show that has some really good, like, I don't know, morals or, you know, a really deep message for the kids of, you know, I hadn't found meditation yet, so I was, but yet something was trying to come through. And she turned and looked at me with such disdain. And she said, David, what we're doing is art for art's sake. And I resigned. that was the writing on the wall. So then I became a Suzuki cello teacher. And the Suzuki method, if you're familiar with it, is a method by which young children at a very young age are introduced to music. And it's wonderful principle. Shinichi Suzuki founded this in the after World War II, and it was a wonderful way to create. His mission was to create beautiful humans with, humans with a beautiful heart. It wasn't to produce, you know, concert level musicians, but rather to nurture by love. And it was. I said, yes, this is for me. So I dived into that, but then I realized that the community in which I found myself was filled with a lot of people that were cynical, that were kind of miserable, and that were the kind of teachers that just had a Suzuki badge that they had, you know, gone through a training, and that was that. So I said, well, have you heard the story of, this isn't it. That was to a neti-neti, yes, not this, not that. And so then I found myself in southern Indiana, and I was, I had gone through all of that, and I said, what's next? In the meantime, I had wrapped myself up in such tension of trying to live up to other people's expectations, of trying to, I didn't know how to take a deep breath. I was just so kind of tense with insecurities and self-doubt. Kind of like that picture with all those words on top of it. That was me, not only mentally, but physically as well. So I spent the night being sick one evening. I crawled into our guest room bed, and I woke the next morning to my wife. Oh, food poisoning. Food poisoning? Ha! If you are throwing up in the middle of the night, you better take a look at your life, because I had the same food that you did, and I am not sick. You better take a look at your life. And she walked out the door and shut the door. Now, afterwards, she said, ooh, what was that? Back in bed, I went, well, then I went, well, maybe she's right. So we had heard about meditation, but I had no idea what it was or how to do it. And this was in 1996. Google was not a big thing. I couldn't just whip out my dial rotary phone, and I couldn't just go on my computer with no internet connection. So I actually had to drive to a bookstore. I had to drive to a bookstore. And so I asked for a book on meditation, and she said, oh, you can read this one, you can read this one. Oh, but you have to read this one. It's a classic. The book was Autobiography of a Yogi. I took it home, opened it up. It was like, yes, this is it. It answered questions that I didn't even know I was asking deep within. It just, I knew from the instant I opened the picture that this was mine. This was my path. And you know, it's interesting how you go back to the channels in which you're given. And I went back and I found the bookstore clerk that sold me. Said, thank you, this is so amazing. You know, just to share with her and say, oh yeah, thanks, yeah, uh-huh. You know, she had no further connection. She had done her job, and that was it. So I was able to find a friend of Biraj's in southern Indiana, and we hooked up, and eventually we made our way out to Portland, Oregon. And so I lived there for 5 years, and we my wife and I got very involved in the Ananda Center there in Portland in 1997. And I'll never forget the first time I walked in. Chanting for me was what was really, really moving. It just opened my heart and let me, I was playing it and tears would stream down my face. I would sing it and it was just, that was it. And I remember that heart-opening experience. Everybody remembers their first time at Ananda. Just that click of like, something is there. And so for me, that was that period of just chanting is creating such an amazing vibration. And then the choir got up to sing, and they sang Swami Kriyananda's, it was probably like Cherish These or something very short, very simple. Oh, how nice. This little group is singing a song by Swami Kriyananda. Kriyananda, yes. Isn't that nice? Well, because the music did not touch my sophisticated view of and cultured upbringing. So I said, well, I can join the choir. They need my help.